friends are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I want to welcome back to our studios the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, the Right Honourable Teresa Villiers. You're very welcome again.
It's great. It's great to be back.
And it's great to go flying through. I mean, you have three cities, 3 days. That's a bit of a hectic schedule.
That's a very hectic schedule, but I've found my meetings really interesting so far. It's a really good opportunity to talk to interested people in the United States who have a focus on Northern Ireland, and obviously, you know, leading figures in the US, including from US government, have played a huge part in delivering peace in Northern Ireland, and the continuing interest and focus of the United States is very welcome as Northern Ireland goes forward to tackle the challenges it still faces.
Now, how is that going? Are there a series of meetings? Can you just give us an outline there?
Well, I was in Washington yesterday, and I had some really interesting conversations with members of the State Department, a lady called Toria Newland, who I thought had a really incisive grasp on issues in Northern Ireland. I also met the Irish ambassador. We had lunch together, and I was really impressed with her as well. And spoke to Paula Dobriansky, who obviously has had a leading role as an envoy in the past, and gave a speech to the American University. So those were some of the key elements of yesterday's schedule.
What are the key issues, and particularly, say, for, you know, when you address university, what is the strategy with respect to, you know, what they might be interested in, or the message more, more important? What message are you bringing?
My message is that there's a huge amount to be positive about Northern Ireland, that it has come very far in the 15 years since the Belfast Agreement was signed and the political settlement was agreed. And the institutions set up under that settlement are very stable. We're now in our longest period of continuous devolved government since the 1960s. Real successes like the Derry London Derry City of Culture programme this year that surpassed all expectations.
And you're preaching to the choir here. I'm glad you're backing us up on that. It was fantastic.
And I hear that that you visited. That is fabulous. The All Ireland Flower took place there. First time it's ever taken place.
Yeah, called to Skill Tory Erin, and it was not only was it a rip roaring success as it had been in previous years, but the welcome was amazing. I mean, again, just to be on the streets and one would imagine that this was not only a great show, but that everybody seemed like they're so comfortable and warming, and the welcome was beyond any expectations.
Yes, absolutely. And it struck me how many young people from the United States were there taking part and, you know, learning about their heritage and culture. And it was, I think the fact that I think there were a couple of bands from the sort of the Loyal Order tradition who were asked to take part, and they got a very warm reception.
Absolutely.
So that played its part in sort of building reconciliation and mutual understanding between the different traditions in Northern Ireland. So I thought it was a great few days. I don't think the weather was great, but it wasn't too bad.
It wasn't too bad. It wasn't too bad either. And and then, of course, we spent several days in Belfast again at the invitation of Belfast Mayor Máirtín Ó-Maolaodha, who said you should really come over. He didn't tell us that we were expected to kind of be available 24 hours, 24/7. He's doing an amazing job. as mayor of Belfast, and also has done a lot in a few short months to broaden the base and to basically, you know, let people know that Northern Ireland has its own melting pot.
Yes.
In, you know, in religion, in business, and in a great changing of you know, of the profile of Northern Ireland. It was amazing. It looked like Belfast itself looked like a little New York.
He's very, that's one of his big interests, the sort of the increasing diversity of Belfast. I mean, it still doesn't have the diversity of somewhere like London or New York, but it has its minority communities now. For example, the last time I saw Máisín, we were signing a book of condolence in relation to the tragedies in the Philippines, and we were there with quite a sizable group of you know, Belfast Filipino population, and they very much welcomed the support they were getting from the mayor. I think he's done really some excellent work. First time I met him, he took me around the mayor's offices and all the artwork that he had on the walls, which he was sort of consciously trying to draw on both traditions
and both
in Northern
traditions,
Ireland as well.
Yes, and indeed. And also, you know, and we're going to, I don't want this to develop into, you know, putting Máisín on wheel or, you know, on a pedestal. But he has done amazing stuff. For instance, only a few days ago, on the Day of Remembrance, our Armistice Day here on November 11th, in breaking yet other barriers, you know.
And
I think that's, maybe that has to be the success of Northern Ireland. But we also obviously acknowledge that, you know, that peace is fragile. It is a fragile instrument anywhere, and Ireland is, Northern Ireland is really no exception to that. Maybe you can, you know, address how you see that coming on in terms of, you know, again, the diversity and the sectarianism, you know, which is part of, indeed, and a good part of your own portfolio in coming to Ireland.
Well, I think you're right. It's we should never undervalue or take for granted the relative peace and stability Northern Ireland now enjoys, and it has to be continually sort of worked on and cherished. And two of the ways in which I think it's important to do that is through work to boost the economy and underpin political stability with prosperity. And earlier in the year, the UK government and the Northern Ireland Executive signed an extensive economic pact, which sees us working together much more closely than we ever have before. And the other, you know, really key thing that we have to achieve is, as you say, addressing the sectarian divisions that still exist in Northern Ireland. It, you know, for many, those prejudices and preconceptions are very much a thing of the past, but not for everyone. Mm. And the tension that a divided community can cause can have all sorts of downsides, some of which we've seen erupt in street violence, you know, around 12 months or so ago,
right,
in relation to the flying of the Union flag, and also at times during the summer parading season.
Yeah.
And so building that mutual understanding and respect and trust between sort of parts of the community that were alienated from one another is a very important goal, and that's something that the UK government's working with the Northern Ireland Executive to try and achieve.
What is and how significant is the relationship between Northern Ireland and the Southern government?
I think it's crucial for all sorts of reasons in terms of, you know, the work being done on the economy in particular, because the economies of North and South are so interlinked, and it's a focus of work between London and Dublin to to increase the sort of coordination that we do on economic matters, and that benefits the whole of both our countries, but it's particularly important for Northern Ireland. One of the things we're hoping to achieve is a pilot scheme which will enable people from certain countries who are arriving for a trip in the Republic of Ireland to enter the UK and Northern Ireland using an Irish visa, so a pilot for a joint visa arrangement to encourage people who are coming to the island of Ireland for their holidays to see both North and South.
Yeah. Well, that is indeed, there has been a pilot project, one could say, for way more than a decade, and one which we all take for granted, and yet it was a big step as a result of the Good Friday Belfast Agreement, and that was to treat the island of Ireland, particularly in the area of tourism, as something, one of the first rollouts of something which was brand new, which hadn't happened before. I don't think any program could be as successful as that, and it means a lot to the island of Ireland.
Oh, economically, tourism is so important, and actually one of the objectives of my trip is just to remind everyone what a fabulous place to take a holiday Northern Ireland is. And that was one of the reasons why David Cameron decided that the G8 summit would be held in County Fermanagh. Because
and how great was that?
Oh, it was just fabulous. For you know, TV screens across the whole world to see the, you know, 8 most powerful people in the world photographed against a stunning backdrop of Fermanagh Lakeland was such a great way to demonstrate what modern Northern Ireland has to offer. Because sadly, there's a lot of people out there who still think that it's not safe, that, you know, they view Northern Ireland through the lens of the Troubles. And it's great to be able to remind people that it's a peaceful place, it's a beautiful place, and it's hugely welcoming. Even the protesters who came to the G8 summit said they got a warm welcome in Northern Ireland.
Now, just on the issue of human rights, civil rights, and sometimes we see that under the banner of human rights and civil rights, that there are still a great number of people who are dissatisfied with the history of the Troubles, a lot of the sores from there, for instance, on the victims, not just on the nationalist, but also equally on the loyalist side. A lot of mayhem and murder and injustice indeed did take place through that period. And there are those who feel that in moving ahead and that the great changes in Northern Ireland for the better are not well served by not settling and having independent investigations, tribunals, on some of the most notorious situations, during that period of time. Not the least was the issue of collusion with the forces at that time. Is there an attitude? Is there something that leads us, or those who really want to see, an end to our closure for some of those areas, is that alive and well, and can that take place while all of the other progress is being made, and basically you have a people who are very happy with the peace, prosperity, moving in that direction? What is your own feelings with regard to where that is at?
Well, it is an extremely difficult issue. There's no doubt about that, that Northern Ireland's past can cast a long shadow. There's a significant amount of activity underway which is looking at the past, for example, through inquests, through police investigations, through the police historical inquiries team that's been running for some time. And outside of those formal legal processes, there's a huge amount of academic work. Northern Ireland's Troubles is probably one of the most well-recorded and documented conflicts anywhere in the world. And there are a whole range of sort of oral history, local history projects. But there are some who would like to try and sort of achieve some kind of overall process to bring together some of this work. And that's currently being considered by a group chaired by the distinguished US diplomat Richard Haass.
Mm-hmm.
He was asked by the First and Deputy First Minister of Northern Ireland to look at some of the tension, the most divisive issues, and they include the flying of flags, yeah, and also how decisions are taken on parading, but also to look to see whether there was something different that should be done on the legacy of the past.
Some might say that it is great to have, you know, Richard Haass there for that very specific purpose, but that, you know, that the investigations or that, you know, the, what is really needed is to have some level of cooperation within the political parties themselves, and definitely that perhaps you've got the right man for, you know, for the right job. However, there are in Irish American circles and some segments of the Irish American circles, when you talk about investigations that are ongoing and ones that create a tremendous amount of irritation for those who, for instance, can't talk about Northern Ireland without saying, you know, what about the case of Pat Finucane and many other cases that seem like they are open. How do you see that healing process, and is that something that can be addressed now, again, by American influence or, you know, the somebody coming from a neutral area to place a focus on that particular issue and several others?
I think there is a role for US support and advice and help on these matters. I think it's really positive that the First and Deputy First Minister decided to try and take ownership of these divisive issues,
yeah,
and they've brought together under the chairmanship of Dr. Haass,
yeah,
Representatives from all the main political parties in Northern Ireland. And I think, you know, the only way that we're going to make progress forward is if the political parties are prepared to be flexible, to think about these issues in a way which, you know, is prepared to contemplate compromise. And sometimes that's difficult for any of us,
right,
in politics. You know, reaching out beyond your, you know, traditional support base involves taking risks. And I think it is as the Prime Minister said when he came to Northern Ireland a month or so ago, it's now, you know, time to take risks to ensure that progress can be made. And US support for Northern,
right,
Ireland's political leadership in doing that, I think, would be very helpful.
You know, you mentioned Secretary of State Theresa Villiers, about, you know, the cooperation again with Northern Ireland government, Southern Ireland government, and bringing investment into the island of Ireland.
Yeah.
Some would feel that actually that Northern Ireland is at somewhat of a big disadvantage because of the tax structure. And yet, we look at the inward investment, we look at what is happening there, and it seems like it's holding its own. But how do you, tell people in the North of Ireland that actually, and those who are benefiting from, and those who are working towards bringing investment, new investment, particularly from America, into Northern Ireland, how is that ratified? How can you say, oh, well, the tax issue is not as big as you think it is? Why don't you tell us so we have a better understanding?
Well, obviously, your tax system is crucial in terms of competitiveness and attracting inward investment. And it's a high priority for the UK government to be a business-friendly tax environment. So we've been reducing corporate taxes, and within a couple of years, our corporation tax is going to be down to 20%, which is the lowest of any major developed economy in the world. There's obviously been a long time debate in Northern Ireland about whether those taxes could be devolved so that decisions on them would be made installment rather than in London, with a view to reducing corporation tax down to the same low levels that's the case in the Republic of Ireland. And the executive, the First and Deputy First Minister, have put a very clear and, I think in many ways an attractive case to the Prime Minister. And there's some important technical work that's underway on the practicalities, because actually it's quite a complex thing, as all the debate around international business taxes shows.
And these
are not simple. So we'll have a decision on whether that devolution will take place made in the autumn of next year. So there's further work to be done, but it's still very much on the table.
And obviously there are those who feel, that because of the complexity of this, that decision could be rushed forward, and this would be a magical boost for inward investment in Northern Ireland. So if by autumn of next year, that is that's a commitment.
A decision in principle will be made one way or the other in the autumn of next year. If the decision's yes, then the government would look to try and legislate and get this on the statute book before our general election, which takes place in May 2015. But actually, we also think that there are other ways in which we can help make Northern Ireland an attractive place for inward investment, and that was, at the heart of the economic agreement that we agreed, that I mentioned before, between the government and the executive. And events like the G8 are designed to showcase Northern Ireland, and we followed that up with a G8 themed investment conference at the new Titanic Centre in Belfast, which was attended by a whole range of current and new investors. And I think what was really striking from that conference was the strongest advocates of investing in Northern Ireland were the companies who were already there, companies like Citigroup and Allstate and New York Stock
and
Exchange.
And it's also telling that indeed there are, in a downturn of the economy, the world economy, that there were, particularly with the Celtic Tiger in the south of Ireland, there were plenty of opportunities and fears that, that a lot of American companies might in fact just pull out or hold back. And so there must be something very positive happening, actually, again, on the island of Ireland, to think that, not only is everything holding its own, but that in fact in a very competitive field for investment with ambassadors and, all kinds of people reaching out for investment, that Northern Ireland is right in there in terms of not just holding on to what you have, but that you have, your money is being spent wisely, in making Northern Ireland attractive. Who would have thought that a Titanic Centre, a few years ago, that would not only be possible, but that in fact it would be such a rip-roaring success, and that it is. I mean, we were there, we witnessed what had happened, and we're amazed with the number of American visitors that were kind of in awe, not only
and they, ironically enough, a lot of them come on cruise ships, isn't
they? Which is another great great advance. Is there a sense that a lot of progress I'm playing the role of devil's advocate here. A lot of progress is taking place in Belfast, but there are other regions that indeed could use some more support. Coming from the west of Ireland, where we always felt, you know, that whatever was left over, we were welcome to. Is there a sense, though, that that all of Northern Ireland, that the distribution and the equity with respect to, you know, opportunities and investment, that is very much associated with Belfast?
I mean, that is, that's an interesting issue. I mean, certainly it's a big priority for the government. We want the recovery we're starting to see to be a recovery for everyone. So all parts of the United Kingdom, all parts of the community. And there certainly are some now signs that the Northern Ireland economy is on the mend. I mean, I don't see signs that it's overly concentrated in Belfast. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a sense, that's probably a more distinct effect in the Republic of Ireland, where
yes, it is.
Things are picking up really quite strongly in Dublin, but elsewhere it might not. The signs of recovery might not be.
We hope you don't learn anything from Southern Ireland, because at the end there is a lot of competition, which is sometimes presented in, you know, terms of those who might say, listen, we want in on this as well. But from our own personal experience, travelling, you know, throughout Northern Ireland, it would seem that there aren't any, or very few areas that would consider themselves as the stepchildren of the North, and the great progress that has been made in the 15 years.
Yes, I mean, I think there are increasing signs of economic recovery, but it is really important to ensure that, you know, across the board we see people benefit. There's a sort of perception in some parts of Northern Ireland of not having had as much of the sort of peace dividend as they expected. I mean, I think absolutely everyone in Northern Ireland has benefited hugely from the political settlement, you know, not least because, you know, they're no longer under the daily threat of terrorist attack and no longer have to put up with the intrusive security apparatus that came with countering that terrorist threat. But I think, an important focus for the Northern Ireland Executive are those communities who may feel disengaged. And personally, I think looking at educational underachievement in certain communities is a crucial way forward. On the whole, the Northern Ireland education system is phenomenally successful, churns out thousands of graduates, great results at the top end. But for some children, it's in some communities, their education is perhaps not valued as much as it should do, and that actually dealing with that and supporting young families and, you know, encouraging, you know, real aspiration within education, I think is a way to help spread the benefits of prosperity, because you give people the skills they need to get the jobs that there are there, but also helps us address those social and sectarian divisions, because if you raise people's aspirations, then you're more likely to win an argument that says you can trust your neighbour, you know, that there's no need for these backward-looking prejudices to be a part of your life.
Now, how would you rate the progress that has been made again in integration, particularly in the schools and at that, you know, early basic level, educational level?
Well, education in Northern Ireland continues to be very divided. There are many, many children who are still educated in schools which follow just a single ethos, a single tradition. The integrated education sector is very healthy, and many parents choose that for their children. That, you know, schools that admit kids from right across the community spectrum. What I think has been an interesting development over recent years is the idea of developing a concept of shared education. So even if a school has a particular faith-based ethos, it's really important to see that school sharing facilities, sharing classes with schools from a different tradition. I think it's vital that, you know, in the not too distant future, we see every child in Northern Ireland having the opportunity to share at least part of their education with others from different parts of the community so that they can build those friendships at a young age and build that mutual understanding, which is so crucial to address division in society.
Some things that we don't have to wait for, and in fact are evident in Northern Ireland, is that the peaceful attitude that it is throughout the North, that it is one that everybody appears to want to not only enjoy but improve. And somehow that's again connected with you know, the opportunities that people have, the employment opportunities, and inward investment is just not something that's thrown out there. Actually, Northern Ireland is not only ready, but can actually, you know, point out to its own success that even in the worst times and coming out of, again, the troubles, that Northern Ireland has a lot to offer, and that this is, nobody is at the begging bowl. As a matter of fact, for inward investment, there is a sense of competition there that says, look, this is what is happening already. Why don't you talk to those who are here? That's a great selling point.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And there are some fabulous success stories. I mean, for example, you know, London's big red buses are famous throughout the world, and a third of them are made in Ballymena by Wrightbus. But not only are they selling buses to London, they're also selling buses to China. And that kind of competitiveness in you know, tough global markets is hugely impressive. Right at the moment, another Northern Ireland success story is HBO are filming a fourth series of Game of Thrones. That takes us back, actually, to the points you were making about tax being an important element of inward investment. The UK government decided to extend its film tax regime to high-end TV, and that was absolutely crucial for bringing a full series of Game of Thrones. And that series is hugely popular around the world, but also demonstrates some of the, you know, phenomenally beautiful scenery of Northern Ireland, and opens that those pictures up to a whole range of people who I'm sure had never thought of visiting before.
Secretary of State Teresa Villiers, I would like to finally ask you, with respect to immigration and the scourge of immigration that, because of lack of employment, that is very evident in Southern Ireland, despite the great progress and efforts that have been made to stabilize the economy there. Is that also prevalent in Northern Ireland? Do you have a great number of people who are actually being grown for export that really don't have any opportunities when they do come out of the very highly skilled and those who are very highly educated in universities? Putting simply, are they in the same boat as those in Southern Ireland who are just kind of forced to emigrate because of the economy?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, there are young people, you know, with great qualifications, fabulous skills from Northern Ireland who choose to pursue career opportunities, you know, perhaps in London or, you know, overseas. I think that will always happen to an extent, but I fully appreciate how important it is for both the UK government and the Northern Ireland Executive to work together to try and ensure that actually people find the career opportunities that they need close to home as well. I mean, there are some great success stories, but we do need more of them. You know, we do, you know, need to ensure that, you know, people aren't forced to emigrate, that there are lots of good jobs at home if they want to take them up.
I thank you for being here, and also we in spending a couple of weeks in Northern Ireland this summer, again supported by Invest Northern Ireland and the Northern Ireland Bureau, and the great number of contacts that we made in Northern Ireland. It is, I still say, that for those who haven't been to Northern Ireland, not just in the last 20 years, for the last few years, right across Northern Ireland, it absolutely appears like the North has risen, and they're on the they're on the road to success. And again, bearing in mind that there are many people who have legitimate reason, who feel perhaps that the scars of the past have to be addressed, and but all in all, Northern Ireland is okay, and it is thriving, and can actually use a lot of help. And when you have somebody like yourself who is here, who's saying, "Hey, come on, we have what it takes, and we're not asking you for a hand. This time we can actually give you something which is very attractive, and if you don't believe us, we'll then come and talk to those who are here already."
Well, Adrian, I hope you're able to come back to Northern Ireland very soon, and I hope that there'll be lots of people listening to this interview who'll be booking their holidays to come and see Northern Ireland too.
I think that will happen. Again, thank you very much, Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, indeed the Honourable Teresa Villiers. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA.